Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Welcome, friends, to the last Video Nasty project on the left. Tonight, we're going to be going back to the Ingmar Bergman spring, yet again-ish, by watching The House by the Lake. Why don't you check out the trailer? We'll be back in like 2 seconds.
This man and this woman are off to play house for a couple of days. He's a wealthy bachelor. She's a beautiful model. They're looking forward to a terrific time. The only trouble is, they're going to spend it in the house by the lake. A 200-year-old mansion surrounded by acres of woods and crystal blue water. An isolated hideaway, miles from anywhere and anyone. But that's where the beauty ends and the nightmare begins. The House by the Lake. A house of secrets. A house of evil. A house of pain. A house of death.
My God, what's happening?
The House by the Lake. Inhabited by a power that enslaves all who enter and drives them to acts of unspeakable horror. The House by the Lake. Grand prize winner at the International Terror Film Festival. Starring Brenda Vaccaro and Don Stroud. A film scene you'll run from the theater in fright. The House by the Lake.
And that was the trailer to House by the Lake, a.k.a. Death Weekend, from 1976, starring Brenda Vaccaro and Don Stroud.
And the guy who played Harry, the dentist, also was a reasonably significant actor, too.
And it was produced by Ivan Reitman, who, I mean, if you've seen Ghostbusters at all, it's like, oh, yeah, he's Ghostbusters, Stripes. He did a bunch of Cronenberg stuff before he broke into the mainstream. He did Shivers right before this.
Ivan Reitman's been all over the map. So, you know, if you're into movies at all, you'd recognize his name right away.
And it opens really strong with this dentist and this model, and they're driving through the Canadian countryside.
The dentist is driving a Corvette, a black Corvette with a top that can go down. And it is a fine car.
We should point out that Harry, the dentist, is incredibly materialistic. He is all like, oh, I've got this really sweet ride, but I don't open it up because I'm afraid I'm going to melt the engine and it's just going to work badly if I do. And Diane, she's all like, oh no, man, a beast like this needs to run. And she says, let me run.
He lets her drive, and she's a good driver. And they run afoul of these thugs in this Camaro. The Camaro is also a very nice car, although it's not as nicely taken care of as the vet. And boy, the initial chase between the two cars is, it really grabs your attention and hooks you into the movie right away.
They get away, and Lep and his gang are like just absolutely seething. Lep is fucking beside himself. He's like, I'm gonna get that cunt. And the gang, like, they have to separate each other because he's like punching one of his friends.
They kind of egg him on a bit, but they're also like, maybe we should just go on our merry way. But he's like, no, we're going on. We're finding that vet.
And I loved the opening scene because right out of the gate, it establishes Brenda as this very strong, very competent, a little bit naive, because she goes up to the dentist's home on the pretense of, hey, I'm going to have a party. There's going to be a bunch of people here.
Yeah, it's only the two of them when they get up there. And she's like, where are the other guests? And he says, oh, they'll be along. And nobody ever comes up.
So they go out, they tool around on the boat for a little bit because Harry owns this like 10-acre spread and this massive lake, the house by the lake. And, you know, he's got this boat and he goes and tools around the lake and he seduces women, goes back into his house where it's like, please, why don't you come along and, you know, enjoy the shower, relax. I've got to go take care of some stuff. Turns out he's an absolute fucking sleaze.
He not only has the mirror made up to be a two-way mirror, and he can stand behind it while the woman is standing in front of it doing her hair or makeup or getting changed or whatever, but he also has a peephole into the shower and the bathroom and not only spies from in there, but he also takes photographs.
He's got a couple of interesting character beats later on in the movie where, so the bad guys, Lep and his gang, they get to the house and they take over and they assert their dominance over it because it's a home invasion movie and that's what you do in these things. And so once they torment Diane and Harry for a little bit, they take him out onto the front lawn and they're like, hey, Harry, why, you know, chase her, and if you catch her, she'll give you a blowjob. And he's like, man, I don't want to do that. And we're like, fine, we'll beat the fuck out of you right now, here and then. And he's like, okay, fine. So he has just enough humanity and compassion for Diane that he distracts them and gets attacked and buys her time so she can run off.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little bit of compassion and interesting character beats with Harry.
Also, when in the bit where they're destroying the house, there's a bit where you think they're going to assault her, but he distracts them. He's like, I think part of his mind is like, oh, I don't want to see that, so I'm going to do whatever I can to divert their attention away from her. And they get diverted and they trash his house. So, you know, and the really interesting thing about them trashing the house is it's already been established that he's really materialistic, and the breaking of anything in his house wounds him. So, you know, like the one bit with the little flower pot, and the boss villain is like, how much is this worth? And he's like, about $50. That's like, $50 for a plant? Smash! And you just get a little glimpse of Harry going,
I thought the interesting part of the house destruction scene is that Lep is not necessarily wrong. Yes, he's an absolute monster and he's a dick and he's in this house assaulting these people, but he also calls out Harry on his materialistic bullshit. He says, look at this record. It's like, what does this even mean? Look at all this stuff. This stuff is garbage. You are a garbage person because you think all of this stuff gives you class and it's bullshit. And I thought that was an interesting layer to a admittedly pretty one-note character.
There's an implication of classism that's going on here, because the thug and his buddies are all like regular Joes. And here's this dentist, and he's got a shit ton of money. And all he's done is spent it on getting not just a nice house, but a famous house, one that was previously owned by an American senator.
It's important to point out, however, that Harry is crazy insecure because he says, look at this lovely mansion. It's like the Hearst mansion. It's famous. It's beautiful. It's 100 years old. It was passed down through generations to me. I bought it for a song. And Diane's like, who? No, this is the Hearst mansion. Who? And he took offense to that.
Yeah.
And then there was a little bit earlier in that where he was talking about, well, you know, how do you afford this car? Oh, I'm a dentist. I make a lot of money. Oh, I thought dentists were, you know, weren't doctors. Like, I thought you were a doctor. And he takes great offense to that. And he says, oh, yeah, well, dentists have a high rate of suicide and we're very put on. And how dare you talk about me like that? So he is crazy insecure in addition to his materialistic side.
even though he's materialistic, he doesn't really take a lot of good care of his things, because the boat has a damaged carburetor, and it's up to Diane to fix it before they can go tooling around on the lake. He told the two chuckleheads at the gas station to fix it. They said they did, but they didn't. And if he had actually genuinely cared about that boat, he would have gotten somebody competent to repair it before taking a woman up there.
And that kind of shines a spotlight on a couple of flaws of the movie, is that it's a little heavy-handed in places. So here's this bog. Don't fall in. It's like 15 or 20 feet and you will die, surely. And, oh, that's not going to come up later. Or Diane and her amazing driving skills and her prowess with fixing the carburetor and stuff. She's very mechanically inclined. Boy, that's going to come up later, I bet. So it does foreshadow a little kludgily at times.
Yeah, yeah. It's Chekhov's gun. And sometimes when you do a Chekhov's gun, you got to be subtle about it. You know, it's like, just show it. You don't have to do anything more than just a little reference.
Well, you don't have to go, look at this. This is important later. A little more subtlety would have been ideal.
Yeah.
And so the middle half of the movie is basically Lep and his gang tormenting Diane and Harry. And then they, like, wreck his speedboat. They go out and drive around the lake. The two chuckleheads at the gas station, they call up and it's like, hey, there's nobody answering, but he should be up there. We better go investigate. And so they get up and, like, in their boat, and they go off, and about halfway in the lake, the guys on the Harry's boat run into them and basically run them down, run back and forth, and basically run them down.
Yeah. Okay, admittedly, it did add a little bit of comedic drama that was mildly entertaining, but I think after the two drunks couldn't get Harry on the phone, there really wasn't any reason for them to go and check on him. You know, it's like the one guy got it into his head to check on him, and because he was drunk, he wasn't thinking sensibly.
Well, I think the notion of having the characters be comic relief and then eventually pay out, because you take a look at the comic relief in the cops for The Last House on the Left, and they don't actually pay out. They just kind of, here's a wacky scene, and then they show up at the end of the movie and they're done. Here, the wacky characters, all they do is add a body count to the movie, but they do have a part to play in the movie. They're just not superfluous. So there is that.
Well, that's a good point, one that I hadn't considered.
After they crash the boat and after they kill the two chuckleheads from the gas station, and Diane gets away because Harry buys her a little bit of time, she runs through the woods and is being chased by Lep. And it's actually a pretty fairly tense scene, and there's all sorts of, okay, is he going to find her? She gets to this abandoned old rundown log cabin, and Lep corners her, and here comes the first rape scene of the movie. And this is where the rape takes an interesting turn, because, okay, rape isn't more than the sexual act. It is a large portion of it, but it's about control. It's about dominance. It's about asserting your will on the victim. And the one thing she does, he is sitting here saying, oh yeah, why don't you fight? Why don't you struggle? It turns me on when you struggle. It makes me so horny. And she says, fine, and turns it off. She just lies there like a piece of meat. And Lep is like furious and like, I can't do this now. So she seizes control of the rape.
Yes, it's a great scene. I love the fact she's lying there on the floor, totally passive.
So the interesting thing about her character throughout the entire movie that I really, really liked was that, yes, she was victimized. But at no point in the movie was she ever a victim.
Okay, she's not always in control. But she's always in control of herself. And sometimes she's in control of the situation, like in the bit in the shed with Lep.
And so Harry, he eventually tells Diane, hey, I've got a gun upstairs. If we get the gun, we can turn the tables on these guys and get out of this mess because, well, they're in a pickle because there's 4-2. And so Harry manages to, that's all I can stand, I can't stand no more, goes upstairs and gets the gun. Comes out with a shotgun, and unfortunately, it gets taken away. Pretty in short order.
Yeah.
And so Harry gets chased around the house for a little bit while Lep is, oh, hey, I don't like you, pow, pow, pow. His death is off screen.
It was an interesting way of doing it, because you're left with a level of doubt as to whether or not he got hit or not. You're fairly sure he got hit because Lep stops shooting at him. But on the other hand, there's a fair number of other reasons you could stop shooting at somebody. They're out of view. And it was night, too. You could easily lose yourself in the darkness.
But he doesn't show up for the rest of the movie, so we can kind of assume he's dead. Actually, no, I misspoke. He does show up later in the movie, or at least his corpse does. Because after Harry is killed, they finally turn their attentions to Diane. And Runt, one of Lep's gang, he's this almost retarded kind of. He's stunted and very, well, he's the runt of the group, basically.
He's a little guy, and I don't think he's retarded, but I think he's below average intelligence. He doesn't seem as quick on the uptake as the other three guys.
They don't really paint the Lep's gang with any sort of depth to them at all. The only characters that really get any development are the three main leads, pretty much. So the Lep's gang, not so much.
They're not exactly interchangeable, because you can tell them apart. But I really didn't get any of their names. I think of them as the dark one, the little one, and the long-haired one.
They have all the depth of a teaspoon. We'll just be frank.
Yeah.
But really, they don't need to have anything more than what they do. They're just spear carriers to bolster Lep and his gang. And because this is a home invasion movie, what are you going to do? Here comes rape number two. Kinda.
I don't really know how Runt is the one that gets selected, but he gets selected to be the first one to do her over.
It might be a little bit of that, similar to the I Spit on Your Grave, where they want to make Johnny, the retarded guy, a man. So maybe they want to make Runt a man.
It is interesting to note that the boss is willing to let his minions take first shot. I think part of it is he wants to bide his time, because he knows that she's capable of psyching him out. And he's trying to figure out how to get around that. It might also be that he just wants to finish his damn cigarette. Who knows?
So, after the guy in the pond is dead, and after the guy in the boathouse is all burnt up, and after Runt is got his throat slit, we only have Lep. And the last 10 or 15 minutes of the movie are this cat and mouse chase through the woods. He goes out in the night and can't find her. She's wandering around in the dark. It's really tense. Cut to the next morning. And she staggers out into this big field. And there's one of Harry's cars out there. The one that he, when he ditched the Camaro, went up to the house with.
Yeah, the station wagon.
The station wagon-ish sort of thing. And she's all like, okay, this is probably a trap, but this is also my only way the fuck out of here. So she goes over and she's all careful and crouching down and opens the door real carefully. Meanwhile, Lep, he is also clever. He's waiting for her to find the car, and he's got the big old shotgun. And, okay, she's getting in the car, sneak up to the car, all crouchy. She's trying to hotwire it, getting it going.
While Lep is standing up on the hillside watching her holding the shotgun, he reaches into his pocket, pulls out the keys, which he jingles, and then puts back in his pocket while she's searching for the keys inside.
So, unlike your shitty Jess Franco, I'm just going to throw some nonsense on the screen, this is actually a pretty well-crafted back and forth.
Not only is Diane exhibiting quite a bit of intelligence, so is Lep, in spite of being a thug.
And so Diane, she gets the car hotwired and starts driving away as Lep jumps out of the bushes and just starts blazing away with the shotgun. eventually winds up running out of bullets and just attacks the car with like a stick. As she's trying to drive the car from underneath the steering column, she's like got Harry's corpse bouncing in her face, and she's just like manipulating the pedals with her hands.
And she can't see through the windshield very well because Lep's shots have starred up the glass. It hasn't broken yet, but you can't see through the driver's side.
And then she does finally get the upper hand in a stunt. I cannot figure out how the stuntman did not die. This is a really well-crafted stunt. So here's Lep in front of the car with a stick attacking her, and she just straight out runs him over. And the bit that it's a three-shot stunt, and the bit in the middle where you can see the tires contacting flesh obviously is a dummy. However, when he falls off the hood and when he gets up after the fact as the car's driving away, that's a real body. How the fuck did somebody not die?
I don't know. I was actually trying to figure that out myself, because they did a very good job of cutting and pasting the dummy in with him, with the actor.
Diane, she runs over Lep, kills Lep, and drives off. And for a little bit of coup d'etat, hits the Camaro on the way out.
Yes.
It's like, with a final fuck you, boom, nails his car, comes out onto the main road, and comes to a stop. And unlike your Last House on the Left and your Night Train Murders, where you get the cathartic, fuck yeah, she got revenge, hell yeah, it's a very melancholy, downer ending. She gets out and she's like, she feels the weight of the four men she has just now had to kill.
Yeah, I greatly enjoyed the ending of this, and although my favorite part is the car chase at the very beginning, I thought it was a very solid ending.
Yeah, no, it's a surprisingly well done, solid, all around decent flick that's worth your time, I'm thinking. So, all right, Officer Brad, would you seize House by the Lake, or would you leave it alone?
I'd leave it alone.
Why would you leave it alone, then?
Well, for one thing, it's a comparatively tame movie. It's got a lot of suspense, a lot of action, and heart in your throat sort of moments. But in terms of just graphicness, it's pretty mild. There is the scene where one of the thugs gets his throat cut, and they focus on that, and it's pretty squishy. But that's the only graphically violent scene.
You might be able to throw a bone to the guy who gets torched in the boathouse as another violent scene, but it's not particularly graphic. So yeah, it's not graphic at all.
There is some other stuff that's like sort of questionable. There's one nude scene, but you don't really see much.
Yeah, it's only like 0.2 seconds of a side boob, and you see just a little hint of nip on the body double for Brenda Vaccaro. But that's it. Nothing at all.
You don't even get a good look at her butt. And usually, if you're going to show any nudity at all, that's one of the things that's generally considered a little bit more acceptable.
Yeah, the socially acceptable butt shot is makes it on primetime TV, so.
Yeah, exactly. There are two rape sequences, but they're pretty mild for that type of subject.
Certainly compared to what we've seen before with, it's nothing like I Spit on Your Grave or Last House on the Left.
I mean, they don't even get the ladies' clothes off. And it's like really mild in both cases. I mean, it is an attack, and when the leader thug was in the shed starting to abuse her, that was a bit more intense because you really didn't know how that was going to work out.
The movie is intense and it is very suspenseful, but that alone is not a banning or editing or seizing worthy event. So, all right, yeah, I think let it stand. All right, Brad, did you like House by the Lake?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a fine movie.
The one thing that I'm glad this movie managed to execute more or less successfully was the onerous comic relief. The country bumpkins at the gas station and, like, the cop that does nothing. Unlike Last House on the Left and The Comedy Cops.
Or Horror Hotel.
Or Horror Hotel, where, oh my God, that cop, I so fucking hated him. They managed to keep the comic relief bits down to very small segments. So mm-hmm. you can like, all right, I have no issue with this. It kind of sucks, but it's over and done with really quickly.
I think this movie needed a bit of this because you mentioned that it was nihilistic, and it is. It's a very dark movie. It needs some comedy relief. But I think they could have done a little bit better job with the way they executed it.
But aside from that, I thought the story was engaging. I thought the characters were all well written. And so I dug it. It was acceptable.
I enjoyed all of the characters, even the annoying comedy relief. The thugs, okay, admittedly there were thugs and I hated them, but I enjoyed hating them, which is a definite difference than simply hating them because they're a miserable character. These were actually well thought out characters, even though they were dicks.
And the chemistry between Don Stroud and Brenda Vaccaro was really, really tight. I mean, you could see why after this movie wrapped up that they went on to like date for several years after this.
They definitely had a connection that you could see even in the film. The way they looked at each other, the way they acted, the interaction between them as their characters, and even at the end when he was killed, even that was an interesting interaction between the two of them.
So I think the movie is, of the home invasion movies, I think you've got Night Train Murders up here. And this would be right below Night Train Murders. And then like Last House on the Left. And, well, I suppose actually The Virgin Spring would be the top of the list. But that doesn't really count because it's freaking Fellini. All right, so we give it a reasonably enthusiastic thumbs up all around. So there you go. What you gonna do? Well, thank you for wasting half an hour as we dissected House by the Lake. Next week we've got a movie from goddamn Run Run Shaw. You know, the 50% of the Shaw brothers, these guys. That's right, we're going to be watching Inseminoid. I haven't seen it in like 25 years. I only vaguely remember the movie, so we'll see if it's any good or not. So, drop us an email, thevideonastyproject@gmail.com, and next week, Shaw Brothers. Next week, Stay Evil. No, Stay Evil this week. Fuck it. Stay Evil. I'll see you later.